and welcome to Manga Explaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read manga before. Hosted by myself, David Brothers, Deb Aoki, Christopher Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky, follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangaexplaining.com. And I did the thing again where I say myself and then introduce Deb, and it sounds like I'm not part of myself, but we're just going to roll with it.
No time to do it over. Come on.
Yeah, no editing this episode. I am David Brothers, and this week's episode is number 31, season 2, episode 5, depending on how you like to keep count out there in podcast land. This is Blank Canvas, My So-Called Artist Journey by Akiko Higashimura. It's published by Seven Seas. It was translated by Ginny McKeon, and the adaptation was Isabet McFarlane, who we've seen on the show before, and lettering and layout by Lise Blakesley, who we've also seen before. Blank Canvas is essentially, according to the back cover, high schooler Akiko has big plans to become a popular mangaka before she even graduates, but she's got a lot to learn if she ever wants to reach her goal. Looking for an easy fix, she signs up for an art class, thinking all her problems will soon be solved. She's in for a surprise. Her new instructor is a bamboo sword-wielding taskmaster who thinks her drawings are crap. But maybe this unconventional art teacher is just what she needs to realize her dreams. An autobiographical manga by the creator of Princess Jellyfish. And so, I did not read all of Princess Jellyfish. It wasn't super my bag, but it's one of those series where all of my friends like it. So clearly, Higashimura did something right.
What's it about?
It's about a lady who lives in an apartment building where only otaku women are allowed. Like, it's a ladies-only building, and they all have their own kind of fandom. It was pretty funny, but like it skewed like a little young for me.
Okay.
But I really fell in love with Higashimura with Tokyo Tara Reba Girls, which we'll be reading later in the season.
Just 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, right? So soon. 30-something apocalyptic romance, I guess is a good way to put it.
Mm.
Like
all right.
That romance anxiety that you get in your 30s, where you're like, oh man, like, do I need to get married? You know?
I'll be alone forever.
Right?
It was, do I need to get married again?
Oh, man.
No.
But Tokyo Tara Reba Girls made a huge impression on me. It was my favorite book, like, the year it came out. I really loved it. And it led me to Blank Canvas, My So-Called Artist Journey, which actually has a much different title in Japanese. I found out while doing, you know, like a modicum of research for this thing. The Japanese title basically translates to so-and-so, such-and-such, which sort of...
Wait, what?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, kind of, but because like, kaku kaku shikajika.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a play on kaku, which is draw, which is what the teacher keeps telling her to do.
Okay. Interesting.
Draw.
Huh. Mm.
I need to keep up with my Japanese study then. But I really wanted to see what Chip and the gang thought about this. For one, because Chip is an artist who presumably went to art school. I feel like you've mentioned that on the show before.
It's true.
And also, I feel like Higashimura kind of preemptively critiques herself a lot. And I want to see if Chip agrees with the various things that she brings up. But we'll work our way up to that, I think. We'll start with Chris, then Deb, and then Chip. Chris, what did you think of Blank Canvas?
I'd actually already read it. I think maybe people got that from season 2, episode 3, where we announced this, and you were like, I want to do Blank Canvas. And I was like, oh my God, I love that manga. So I was actually really, really stoked, actually, to get to read something, A, that I had already read, B, was only one volume in short, which made me picking 3 volumes that much less of a problem. Higashimura is good, like really good. And it's nice to get to see the Jose mangaka start to find their audience in North America. It's really tough. It's like an uphill climb. And so I'm delighted to see that her work continues to get released and that we'll probably get more in the future, which is really nice. I like this manga a lot. It really cut me the first time I read it as someone who was a teenager who liked to draw and who was one of the better drawers of the people that were around him and slamming into just being able to draw comic book stuff or manga stuff isn't the same thing as having an art career. Yeah, it was like at times brutal reading it, and I wish that I had found a way into training myself the way that she does in this volume. She really works hard. She's like forced to work hard by the sensei who realizes that. And so it was a little heavy for me, but also it's ridiculously funny, like pure jokes. Loved that part of it. It also, like, you know, made me look back on things and be like, yeah, you didn't do that, but you learned how hard it is to actually be a professional artist. You know what I mean? Learn how hard it is to actually make comics. And I think it made me a lot more empathetic to other artists and other creators. And it kind of defined the rest of my career from that point on, where it was like, why don't you just like do good things for people that make comics if you're not willing to, like, you know, put yourself through the crucible to get to make those good comics yourself.
Yeah.
So
when are you going to start doing good things for me?
Yeah. Jessica wouldn't approve. I think it's a great book. And to the point where I'm like a sad I have to go first, because if you guys don't like it, I feel like so such an asshole. But no, it's good stuff. And I think anyone who's had an artistic career where they did have to really struggle with their work and their own self, like their impression of their own work, I think is going to be, it's a great manga for them.
Did you have a favorite character, out of curiosity? Someone who really struck you?
No, that's the other thing. Everyone, like, obviously it's her story told from her perspective. And I think that that's really clear. Most of the other characters don't have, like, they all are well composed. They have an interiority, but it's not necessarily on display. Mm-hmm. I think the best character moment in the book actually is when her friend, who goes to take the art university entrance exam with her, gets to the city, sees where the school's going to be in the middle of the mountains, and is just like, nah, I'm gonna take this exam. If I get into this one, my parents are going to make me go. Yeah, it was so good. But then she does this amazing comics thing where she cuts forward, and it's the only time she does this in the whole book, to that character as a grown-up who's still her friend and who's like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that happened. And she's like, what do you mean you kind of remember? You just sat in the room all day watching comedies and made me go take the entrance exam by myself. And you get to see, you're reminded that these are events that have already unfolded, and you're being like, they're being re-unfolded to you as the reader. But getting to see that, like, one time where she brings the, you know, in mid-story, she brings the story forward again to show that this life and death situation of you being a teenager and trying to decide your fate in art comics, it's just like, you know, a middle-aged woman having a cigarette, having a coffee with her pal going, oh, I guess I remember that. It's not that important, is it?
Yeah.
But it's like a huge plot point in this story. And I think that that's also, like, especially coming at it from as someone who's older, who's not in the middle of that, like, oh my God, everything I do with my art right now is going to define the rest of my life. I'm not in that phase of my life anymore. Thank Christ. I think that that is like such a breather. You know what I mean? Like, you get to like, oh, she didn't do that thing and she's still okay. Like, she doesn't care.
Like, yeah, it worked out.
It worked out. Like, maybe it didn't work out. Maybe she didn't go into art at all, but she's okay. She's a person. You know what I mean? Who still exists. They still have a friendship. I thought that that was probably the best character moment in the
whole world. And that character doesn't really have any real sense of anxiety throughout the story.
No, she's like, so cool.
That really tracks with her, like, present day self. Just like, what, that thing? Oh yeah, oh what, oh whatever.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
and I think that there are more character moments, but that was the one that stood out for me.
Okay, Deb, how about you? What did you think of Blank Canvas?
Oh yeah, well, obviously this was something I was really happy when I got licensed. It was one of, when we did the best and worst manga, this was one year it was my this should be licensed pick.
Nice.
Like, oh wow,
I really liked it a lot. I can relate to a lot of it. I too went to art school. I too thought I was going to make shoujo manga. I had all the, you know, the background of being the talented one in art in school, and then letting yourself think, oh, I'm so talented. Oh, I'm so good. And then, like, then having your face slammed into it. Like, no, actually, you're not that good at all.
Yeah.
Sucker. But, you know, it's really fascinating to read this because it's coming from a place of, you know, like, unlike being in real time where it's just the person is a high school or college student going through this, there's this kind of melancholy thread going through it where this person is remembering how selfish or naive or bad decisions were made. Kind of like in, you know, Journal of My Father, where there's that feeling of, oh, I didn't realize it at the time because I was young and selfish and kind of full of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my teacher did all this stuff and he was actually very kind, even though he was hitting me with a bamboo sword every 5 minutes. You know? I mean, the artwork is pretty crisp. But, you know, I was a little bit curious because, one, there's no translation notes in the back. Mm-hmm. And two, is it, if you never read Akiko Higashimura's actual manga, does this book make sense? You know, like, do you really grasp that she's this successful manga artist looking back on herself in a self-deprecating mm-hmm. way? Or is this just kind of readable as just, oh, just this interesting story about a girl growing up and mm-hmm. deciding to get into art school?
Well, I mean, I can answer that.
Please.
Oh, man.
As the person who hasn't read any of her work before, there's a sense that she's a professional. There's not necessarily a sense that she's super successful. Just that she has made it. She has a career. Like that's basically all I got from it. Whether her range of success was high or low, I have no idea. But it's clear reading this that this is her job. This is what she does. So yeah, that's the case.
Cool. What did you think about it?
I loved it, and much like Deb and Chris, it hit home for me very directly. Like very directly. Like I was the same, you know, I was the class artist in high school. And then what happened was I went to graphic design school because I didn't understand you could draw for a living. So I took design, but I spent that whole year doodling and using every project as an excuse to draw. And my teacher was like, why are you drawing? You're a graphic designer. Like you should take illustration. And so I essentially flunked out that year. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to go to Sheridan College, which is like the big college in my province for art. And me and my buddy were putting together our portfolios for it. And I was just like, oh, this is a piece of cake. my portfolio, I'll draw the scenes they want. I can draw a ball, fine. I'll draw a cube, whatever. Easy. Doing all my little tricks. And I submitted, and I didn't get in. And my buddy did.
Wow.
So my fallback was Art Fundamentals, which is basically just like the Breakfast Club of art.
Nice.
So Sheridan College, they're known for their animation program, which was huge at the time. Like anyone that worked for Disney came from there. They also had a really great illustration program. Mm-hmm. So basically anyone who couldn't get into animation or illustration got into Art Fundamentals because you didn't need a portfolio to get in. And it basically spent a year teaching you how to do a good portfolio. So that was super humbling.
Illustration or animation, yeah.
Yeah, that was super, super humbling. And that realization, like, oh, no, I'm not going to be like the top artist in the class, or I probably won't end up working in comics or doing anything art-related. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just try and eke out a living. Yeah, that hits pretty hard, especially when you're young and you have those dreams. Like, The page that I love the most in here is when she just details what she thinks her life is going to be to the point where women are sporting the hairstyle of her character. Just such a funny, like, I get it. I get those daydreams. Like, I remember doodling Spider-Man comics like in high school, just being like, oh man, I'm going to blow them out of the water. This is amazing. And then I produced just a lot of garbage. I never had a teacher quite as hard on me as her sensei was in this. But there were definitely teachers who, you know, basically called you out in your bullshit when you're, you know, usually using visual tricks to like cover the fact that you don't know how to draw. Yeah, so I mean, this very directly hit me. I was also just super fascinated with the process of schooling. Like the fact that like these students were flying like cross country to do basically art exams.
As teenagers
and just like studying all these different like statues, hoping that they're going to get that statue because they know how to draw that statue. It's just like so stressful.
So like, different, so right? Stressful. How they get to art school. Because like in this case, like they have cram schools so you can pass these exams.
Yeah. Which that's amazing.
It's unheard of in America, right? It's like you either do a portfolio and you kind of hope you get in, or you go to some place that flips through your portfolio really fast and says, you got the money?
Basically, yeah. I think that's most schools now. Yeah, so I mean, I found it super educational, and I love watching your journey. This is definitely one of those books where I was eager to read a volume two at the end of it to see where she goes. I also like there were a few scenes and pages that I really liked. There's a page with her in present day pouring herself a cup of tea, and then it's the drawing of like the really nice drawing of her art utensils and her basically kind of apologizing to her sensei. Like, it took me a long time to kind of figure it out. It's such a beautiful, delicate page, and it doesn't really show her face. And it's a quiet moment of her pouring the tea, which, you know, reflects the sensei giving them all tea. I also really liked the scene with her and the sensei when he buys her the beer. She has one sip of it. such a weird character, that guy. Like, the fact that it's autobio, it's funny. Like, things hit harder when you know something's autobio. And I think I've said this before. It's like watching Whose Line Is It Anyway, and like how the jokes don't necessarily land if they were scripted, but because you know they're done on the spot, they're funnier.
Yeah.
So the fact that the sensei like tried to carry her on his back. Like, if that was just a normal story, I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's kind of charming. And this, I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. Because you know it's probably true.
I love the sensei character because he's in basically every sports manga. Like, he's a guy riding behind a boxer on a bicycle, like hitting him with a stick. He's, you know, the coach making him do drills.
Yeah, he's coach or Polly and Rocky.
Yeah, exactly. And I've never seen it for art school. But it makes perfect sense kind of with his approach, which is like, look, I'm going to, like, you draw how you draw. I'm going to show you how to approach drawing, how to be a professional, how to finish your work, essentially.
Yeah.
So I did not go to art school. I'm actually a college dropout, but I almost went to art school because in high school, I was in kind of an art class track, like doing like charcoals and landscapes and things like that. But I never got the hang of like human proportions. But I realized that writing was easier, so I switched gears like the end of my junior year. So reading this was super fascinating for me because it's a bunch of struggles that I just kind of like punked out of when I was 17 years old and never had to do, like the art tests and that kind of thing. And because I know her work and I'm so entertained by her work, it's funny seeing her as kind of one of her own characters. But yeah, when I was a kid, you know, everyone drew when I was a kid. That was just a thing that children did. You know, Ninja Turtles. I came up in the Image era, so if you couldn't draw like a Jim Lee, Wolverine, or Gambit, you were a loser, you know?
I could also draw those things, yeah.
Right?
So Rob Liefeld was a loser?
Kind of, sort of, yeah. But so this book was really fun, kind of seeing how she thinks of her art, but also how she thinks of herself as an artist. Because she's I cannot say self-deprecating. Yeah. I'm just going to leave that in. Forget it. But we all know how talented and successful she is. So the balance of seeing like her dumb teenage self and then her more melancholy, you know, adult self, who is more or less the same age I am now, which is another reason why I really enjoy her work, is the change in perspective.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about books that people, you can feel like they enjoy the act of drawing. Do you feel like this is one of those?
No.
But it also doesn't feel labored either. It feels like it comes naturally, but she doesn't. Oh, it's weird that you asked that. That's actually hurting my brain a little bit because I agree. Yeah, it doesn't feel like she just loves putting marks on the page, but I think she likes to tell stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. She loves making comics, which I think is a different thing than loves to draw.
Yeah. I was going to say that she loves comics in general. When I was planning this conversation in my head earlier today.
She's actually kind of well known for being extremely productive. Mm-hmm. Like 100 pages a month.
I would believe it.
She has two or three ongoing serials right now, like a webtoon and then like a magazine comic and then stuff like that. I was just looking up like crazy. We tried to actually invite her to TCAF, but she literally never has a break in her schedule because her series are always overlapping. So maybe Golden Week, but maybe not actually, because that's when she's catching up on stuff.
Yeah. Sensei really broke her brain, I think.
Really, truly. And she's drawn herself in that kind of track jacket that he wears as a self-portrait for years. It's in Tokyo Tower Reba Girls. I believe it's in Princess Jellyfish. And because since she's never mentioned this guy before now, you know, there was no chance to really like kind of digest what that means for her as an adult, as an artist. Like, is it an homage to sensei? Or is it just that like track jackets are cool? you know?
Well, or I didn't both. Pick up on that. That could go either way, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Deb, you said something interesting about how there's a lot of her actual drawings in this book.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty hilarious. Like, if you look in the first couple pages, mm-hmm. there's this, yeah. like, in elementary school, I joined the manga club, and it says, actual artwork from back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And it legitimately does look like artwork that a sixth grader would draw from a yeah. reading shoujo manga magazine. It's interesting because, and then there's a lot of shoujo manga affectations in this, like mm-hmm. the flowers all over the place. And like on page 10, where there's this, where she has these blank eyes, like a yeah. glass mask.
Like sparkling, yeah. shining, I guess is a better word.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of always this back and forth between this shoujo manga sparkly dream mm-hmm. and the reality that she's in now.
Yeah, I like how often the sparkly dream shows up right before like she gets her comeuppance or something.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, I'm just looking at that page with the blank eyes and the flowers and Winter Sensei, you know, compliments her. I love that she goes, to be honest, I think so too. That's like, so good.
And I'm like, there's another page where, like, on page 40, page 50, where she tells the school counselor, I'm going to be a shoujo manga artist. And he says, I'm sure you'll succeed. You'll do everyone in Miyazaki proud. You really think so? I think so too. And like, everyone's telling her, oh, my aunts and uncles and all my friends, all my teachers, and everyone said, my ego grew up too. Or should I say, it blew up.
I love it.
But there yeah. was one notable exception.
It's such a weird, I mean, I think about it a lot with, you know, a lot of my friends have kids. So I kind of watch them go through the things that I went through, and complimenting a kid versus critiquing them. Like when is it okay to do one or the other? Like mm-hmm. it's such a hard thing because you want to encourage them to draw or to do this thing that they really enjoy. But like, if it's just constant accolades and they just don't get better, it's like, are you setting them up for failure? Like, are these teachers and the aunts and uncles, are they helping or hurting? Like,
yeah.
Does everyone have a role to play here? Like, should, you know, one person in her life be, you know, hey, you're great. And the other person be like, hey, you don't know how to draw hands.
It kind of balances.
Like, I remember yeah. two very specific moments as a kid where a relative critiqued my work.
Oh.
Yeah, same.
My mom, I got one of those big 96 packs of Prismacolor pencil crayons, and I just mm-hmm. went to town with the green, and I did this amazing She-Hulk. And I showed my mom the She-Hulk drawing, and she was like, who's that? I'm like, She-Hulk. She's like, that's a woman? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you just drew a man with boobs. I was just like, I looked and I was like, oh, she's right. They're like, shouldn't she have like hips or something? Like, what's going on here? I'm like, oh, I didn't even think there's a difference between, oh, and I remember just like kind of walking away like, oh, that's weird. What a weird feeling. But I got better at it. Like, that's the thing. Like,
yeah.
It kind of stung. And then the other one was just, it was just a slight thing where my Uncle Fred, who was the only relative who read comics, I showed him a drawing I did of like, it was like Spider-Man and his mask was kind of rolled up. And he's like, oh, that's good. But it gave him kind of a daredevil jaw. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah. Yeah, it's just a bit too rugged for Spider-Man, isn't it? I'm like, oh, I thought they all just look the same, but no, I guess they don't.
That's great feedback.
It's great feedback, very specific to comics. But it's funny, those two things really stick out. The compliments have never stuck out. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of like a time, I'm sure there were plenty of times where relatives or friends of the family or whatever, you know, told me that I was a great artist. But I don't remember any of them because why would I?
Like, but just I remember rolled off your back.
Yeah, because they're just like, oh, just another one of these compliments of my She-Hulk that's just Hulk with boobs. The critiques stick out, one, because they stung, two, because they actually meant something and they made me do better.
But the critiques also meant that they were looking at your work carefully. You know, I went to University of Hawaii. Then I went to School of Visual Arts for like a semester, like two semesters. And then I came back to UH because SVA was too expensive and frankly not worth it. But the thing in the art department in Hawaii was the professors were largely pretty easygoing. I mean, Hawaii is generally pretty easygoing. People are pretty nice. But there was an art teacher who came from the mainland to teach. And he was blunt. He would tell people, oh, you know, maybe you should do this. And maybe, you know, that's not working. And his critiques were critiques. And I liked that teacher a lot. I learned a lot from him. I got to be a lot better as an artist because he really looked at my work as an individual and gave me really good, useful tips for getting better. And because I took his advice seriously and had a conversation with him about it, you know, I got better and I liked him a lot. He was one of my favorite professors, but a lot of the other kids really didn't like him because they were not used to being critiqued. They were not being used to being told that their work wasn't good enough or they didn't put enough effort or they could, you know, maybe they should try something else. So I don't think he lasted more than 5 years at UH. He ended up going back to the mainland. But I think about that a lot, you know, in the sense that one, that I feel bad for him because he really cared.
Yeah.
And by being strict, showed he really cared and he really cared about the quality of the work. But it made me feel also bad for the people who didn't take his critique seriously. Like, what are you here for?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I could always tell. I mean, in my program in illustration, there were a lot of kind of post grads there who took fine art, realized they couldn't make any money in fine art, and they came to illustration.
Oh.
So they would come in, they'd be really good. And we'd be like, wow, they're really good. But they were always very defensive about critiques because they knew they were really good. And so over the 3-4 years I was there, everyone else got better and they didn't. They were too busy arguing with the teachers and essentially ended up becoming like the worst artist in the class after starting off as the best.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, you know, the relationship with the sensei here kind of mirrors a lot of like what I saw in school, which is like at the beginning of the year, when you had a tough teacher, people just didn't know what to make of it. And people would be angry and just like, what? And how could they be like this? But as it goes on, and then as they learn, maybe there's a Stockholm syndrome thing there too, but like by the end, they're beloved. Like to get like a B plus or whatever from them just means so much.
Because you had to earn it.
Because you had to earn it. Like I had teachers like that in high school too that weren't even necessarily art teachers. I had... Sorry, this just feels like storytelling podcast. I apologize.
That's people what makes like it fun.
Go for it.
I was considered a, don't want to brag, a gifted child with bad grades. And so when I went to high school, I was in the gifted program. So me and my friends were in specific classes for the smarties. And I didn't do very well. And in math, I did quite poorly, quite poorly. And they bumped me down. They kicked me out of the class and put me down to the next level, which was advanced. So I felt like a total failure. I'm just like, I got this teacher, Mrs. Lillo, and she was so mean, just so incredibly mean. And I couldn't stand her, but it was the same thing where like over the, because I was so scared of her, I focused because I didn't want to get the bamboo sword. And by the end, like I was what they call a mathlete. Like I was like, I was competing on a provincial level for geometry, which was like, you know, never repeated, never the kind of thing. Fast forward decades later, I'm working at the newspaper and I did like kind of humorous graphics about politics. So I did one about parliament and how parliament was out of control. And I had all my solutions. My jokey solutions, that one of them was to bring in my old math teacher, Mrs. Lillo, to set them straight. So I just did a little drawing of Mrs. Lillo, just like, you know, rapping somebody on the knuckles. And I got an email and it was from Mrs. Lillo.
That rules.
And I couldn't believe she's still alive. She must have been in her 80s. She's like, my son pointed this out in the paper to me. And I was like, is that Steve Murray? Oh my goodness. And like, I don't think I was that hard on you, was I? And I just wrote back. And I'm like, you were the best. You made me a much better student. And I think you would whip Parliament into shape in no time.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's actually a great example of what you were talking about earlier, how Like, you don't know what kind of critique to give kids because like, they're kids. Like, I don't think your mom should be the person giving you art advice necessarily. She should be, she should be the one saying, like, you know, I believe in you, try your best. Yeah. It's when you like go out in the world and you meet your teachers, your Mrs. Lillos, your senseis, that like you kind of hit that wall and it's like, oh, I have to draw this one bust 50 times to get it right.
Yeah. It's fascinating. The one thing I was really interested in the story was the fact that it was not a how-to.
Yeah.
Like almost all instances of the sensei critiquing her was that this is crap. You're drawing it poorly. Draw it better. Like, it was never specific. It was never like, oh, you need to push pull here. You need to like focus on, sometimes it talks about proportions, but like it was very general advice. So it didn't get kind of in the weeds on like the specifics of how to draw well, which part of me kind of wanted a little bit of that because I wanted to know what she was doing wrong and what his advice actually was. But it would have derailed the story. So I think it was a smart choice to kind of gloss over the specifics.
Yeah, I think it's almost a subtextual thing where it's like the advice they're giving is like commit yourself 100% to what you're doing. Like learn the angles, you know, learn the bust.
Yeah. Learn the bust.
I love the one on like 110 where it's like this, a picture of sensei as like an artist with a beret and he goes, oh, you would expect someone to say this. Like, oh, you could just draw fine without going to college. And yet, he's throwing a tantrum, like twirling the circle, going like, you're never going to pass with crap like that. Draw some more. If you want to go to art school, draw like your life depends on it. Damn it. He cusses. And, you know, if you really think about it, it's amazing that he didn't get reported.
Yeah.
All this corporal punishment and verbal abuse. Like he tells this one girl, like, that's the kind of lunch a chimpanzee would eat. And then he's like making fun of this girl. And it's like, he's kind of a jerk.
Well, yeah, it's true. Like they don't like sugarcoat it at all. But also, yeah. I think it's down to the fact that he's his own school. Mm-hmm. Like he's not like in the school system. Like he wouldn't be a teacher in the school system because of all those things.
He can't get fired.
Yeah, he can't get fired. He's just like, oh, you're done. You don't want to pay to be here. All right, go.
Yeah, but he is very observant at the same time. Like he's like a kind jerk. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, actually, what it is, he holds people to a very high standard, I think is what it is. Like, you need to sit down and do your work. You need to, you know, always be honest. You need to always commit yourself. But he's also kind of a goofball with, like, the chimpanzee joke.
Yeah.
Which seems, like, really cruel, but then it wins everyone over, which I was really happy to see.
I know. Yeah, that could have gone really wrong. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, what about the one where it's, like, he, like, puts his death claw on the girl's face and he says, no crying!
Deb and Chris, this is one for your manga history expertise. Would you call this essay manga, like what Nagata Kabi does?
Yeah. But also, it's interesting because Chip mentioned it's a how-to book. Or like, it's not doing how-to. It's not like you have to do this, so it didn't get bogged down in the details. Because I thought he was going in a different direction when he said how-to. Because there's a part in this that we didn't talk about yet where she has to cram to actually get into school. And so she buys these guides that are available at, you know, the bookstore and things like that, that like teach her how to do this, like how to pass this part of this test, how to pass this part of this test, how to pass this part of this test. And she gets really good at like gaming this system through these books. This doesn't seem at all like a how-to book on how to become a mangaka, even though it's sort of as an autobiography, it's about her artist's journey, et cetera, in the way that those how to become a mangaka books actually do exist in Japan. Like, how to break in, how to whatever, how to find this. And like this information, she wants to be a mangaka. She's just like come up with this way that it's going to work as a fantasy in her head. Because when this story happens, those books, that roadmap doesn't take place or doesn't exist now or in that place. Sorry. So I think I was kind of expecting when I went into this book for it to be how you too can become a shoujo mangaka. And it's like, obviously having read Tokyo Tatareba Girls, I should have been like, oh no, because that's not what Iga Shimura sensei does. Like that is not what she does. But I was kind of expecting this to be more of a how-to and less of an essay manga, less of a personal story, and more of a how I did it and you can do it too. And it's very personal. There's something going on with the sensei. I think like I haven't read past volume one. I really want to I really want to, but I decided
there's only five volumes. It's so good.
I know, and I plan to read them all. Don't worry. But I wanted to do one episode where I couldn't just read ahead and talk about things that are not in this text.
Fair enough. I'll do the same. Yeah.
Okay. Every single time we do one of these things. But yeah, I really like it could be going in a place that really does move it to a very personal essay space is my thought. Mm-hmm. Deb, what do you think?
There's definitely essay aspects of it where like she's explaining the art school admission process, which is super helpful because it's so different. It's so unique to Japan.
Yeah, but that's also just for context for the story itself.
Yeah. No, it's kind of nice that she explains it because I don't think, you know, like as someone who is not familiar with that system, it was really helpful to understand.
Yeah. Would it be like taken as read in Japan? Like most people kind of know how this system works?
I don't think everyone tries to get into art school.
Ah, okay. True. Right?
Like, and she even says a couple times at the very beginning, like, oh, you guys won't know this band or this magazine or whatever. Just look it up because you're young. So I think
there's that. Yes.
And she does explain a couple times. It's like, I think they changed the system just afterwards, so it won't work anymore. So don't bother trying it. And she's very much talking about a place and a time and how things worked. So yeah, she has to give context, but it's also part of her story. Like, this is why she had to do this thing. Because if she just ended up, it's like, oh, I had to go to Kanazawa to do this test, and she didn't explain the whole testing procedure, you could have gotten away with it as like a story or as a piece of fiction, but as a personal story, I don't think she could have gotten away with it.
Okay. Makes sense to me.
Well, I mean, you can also disagree, but that's my reading.
No, yeah, I was just curious about your take. It's interesting because there's a bit, I'm going to leap ahead, like Deb and Chris just said they weren't going to do. In volume 2.
Oh, you bastard. Well,
that's good. Where she comes back to her college and gives us a speech, like a talk to the current class, like after she's made herself as a mangaka, after she's like seen all this fame and she meets like a teacher from back then or friends and that kind of thing. And the teacher is just casually like, oh yeah, you're like, we have a manga program now. Like this is a thing we do. When she's kind of sheepish about, you know, like, I felt like I ran away from fine art, she says, or something like in that realm. And the teacher's like, no, like, you were honestly, like, really good for us. Like, this really worked out.
Oh, man, that's so funny because, like, I had the exact same thing with my college. Because, going into college, like, you were not allowed to draw comics. You could draw comics or fantasy. Like, those were in, like, the portfolio requirements. Like, no comics, no, like, nothing like that. And it kind of, you know, beat it out of a lot of us.
Yeah.
But, you know, as is the way. Like a lot of us went on and did comics. So now they invite us back to the college to promote like the successful graduates. Cause it's me, Kagan McLeod, Jeff Lemire, Ramon Perez.
Jeez.
Wow.
And so like, we'll have these events where we'll go and be like a full room. And like, we're just kind of laughing to ourselves. Like you didn't want us here at all.
You should
and that was like, our faces are on the brochures. I'm like, come on. But you know, it turned out to be, you know, one of the only ways you can actually maybe possibly make a living while destroying your body. And so they latched onto that and they can sell the program that way.
It's just that in the NFL. Who knew?
Yeah, that's it. Oh, so many comic concussions.
Somehow I don't think there's like MTV Cribs for a comic book artist with the giant mansion with the three pools.
I think it's just Alex Ross.
Oh, okay.
I've seen pictures of his place. Yeah, there's definitely a Cribs in progress there.
Chris, as a bookseller, what kind of reader would you pitch this book to? Like, who do you think would be into this?
So I was talking to Andrew, who is still a active bookseller, runs Little Island Comics for kids.
Sorry, I forgot you were the John Wick of bookselling and currently retired.
Yeah, exactly. Getting dragged back in.
Until they cancel his favorite comic and he comes back and takes revenge.
And he was like, what are you guys doing for the podcast tonight? And I'm like, oh, we're doing Blank Canvas. It's really good. Have you read it? He's like, no, I haven't read it, but I've sold so much of it. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it's about a girl going to art school and following her dream and like whatever. You just mentioned that. And it's the first thing a teacher or a librarian or someone who likes comics in her life picks up and is like, yeah, done. I want this. Because it's like, It's catnip, I guess, in its way. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I want something that's going to encourage people. I want something that's going to like show how someone did it, how they found success. And it's not like, which I hate to say it, but it's not problematic. Like, there's no random boobs yet, at least in the first volume.
There isn't
no,
any
like swearing. No. There's no
so
whatever.
Teachers and librarians of the world, you're safe. please order blank canvas. It's fine.
the only problematic thing is the teacher beating the students with a wooden sword.
And it was the 90s. The 70s,
and it's Japan. Come on. Give it a break.
I think that's pretty much it. It's like you just describe what this book is and someone's going to know if it's for them, whether they're buying it for a school or a public library, or whether they're buying it for themselves or a kid in their life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everyone has that, you know, niece or nephew that likes to draw. I wish this book had existed 10 years ago. I would have given it to my niece who likes to draw.
Yeah. I had a thought reading this, like comparing it to North American autobio comics that I've read and how it's a little bit different. First, because like having a female lead is one thing, but it being about like a comic artist and you know it's going to end in success at the end instead of, you know, like, oh, I wish I had health insurance.
Instead of like Dan Close, Art School Confidential, which is cynical as all hell.
Like this is going places and like it feels good to read. And I was like, what else feels like this? And what I came down on were sports biographies that were specifically co-written by the sports person in question and like written by someone else, because there's always like that triumphal aspect to it.
Yeah.
Even just the fact like she keeps going back to her hometown and like all the title pages for each chapter is like a cool landscape and then a figure. Like it looks like a book that you're supposed to take lessons from or maybe emulate in some way in your own personal way, I would say.
Yeah.
Cool. So we can do final thoughts, and then also if you have a North American comic to compare it to, you can throw that in the mix too. Let's start with Chip, then Chris, then Deb.
I love it. It, like I said earlier, it really hits home. I think I keep debating whether or not it would have been a book that I would have appreciated as a younger artist when I was in the egotistical phase, like whether it would have actually like made me realize that maybe I'm not great.
Yeah.
But I think it's good that I came to it now at this stage in my life, so I can look back on it the way the author's looking back on her life. It's really well told, informative. It definitely makes me want to hit volume 2 at some point. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I quite like it. In terms of comparisons, I don't know. I don't know, because it's hard, because like we were saying, or what you're saying, like autobio comics are all just like cynical or, like coming from a place of like not successful. So there's no light at the end of the tunnel in a lot of autobio comics. It's like, I do this because it's a compulsion, even though my wife hates that I do it and I can't make the rent, which is, you know, most of comics. So I can't think of a proper comparison.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah. Final thoughts. I think I do appreciate it more as a grown-up than I would have as a teen. I would have been on her side and been like, this guy's a jerk, and I hope he gets his comeuppance. And now it's just like, you can kind of see all the pieces moving, or I could see all the pieces. And I really enjoyed it, and I would have no problem recommending this to anyone who wants, like even people who don't necessarily, well, I guess that's what the podcast is, read a lot of manga. I think that this is a good one to start with, maybe, if you're, if you're not sure. Except for it reading backwards and having some Japanese cultural stuff that doesn't 100% make sense.
But they say Google conceived. It.
Yeah, you can also Google it too.
Yeah, there's nothing there that like pulled me out of the story.
There is one thing for me. I just remembered. Mm-hmm. There's a cutaway panel to that like early scroll that's considered the first manga with the frog the doing something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly a Japanese reference that like reference to that part of the story that is being referenced, you know, in the story itself, I did not get. And I was like, oh man, my cultural knowledge has a huge gap here. I've got to figure this out. And I just realized that that's the kind of thing that when a lot of people that don't read manga, because I know I read manga and do the podcast now, are like, yeah, I try to get into manga, but there's just so much stuff I don't understand. And you're thinking like, just read the story and let it wash over you. But like, no, like there's one panel where all of a sudden it cuts away to two frogs and one of them has a rope unexplained and then goes to the next panel again. And you're like, what's that? I think if you read a lot of comics, at the very least, you're kind of trained to be like, all right, that image was weird, but we're going on to the next image and we're going to see what happens and see if it fits into context. And then by the time you're 6 or 7 images down the road, you've kind of forgotten the weird frogs.
The story doesn't hinge on the frog panel.
But what if it does? Like, but you get to volume 5 and it turns out the frog panel was the most important part. And if we had just known, it was foreshadowing for like everyone dying at the end or something. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I think it's the kind of thing that does trip very close readers up, that it's comics are like a magic eye test. You can't focus on them too hard and you can't not focus on them enough. You have to just relax your eyes until the 3D image appears. And that's how I approach comics. Like, if I'm too focused on it, it's work. And if I'm not focused enough on it, I don't retain it, or I just like end up just reading the word balloons and skimming through. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people who start reading comics read it like prose, like they're reading it. And then you get to a panel that you can't explain or understand. And I don't even know, like, all of a sudden you're just tripped up, right? You're out of the immersion's gone. You're out of the moment. You can't see the sailboat anymore or whatever. Mallrats reference. Anyway, long story short, try to get past that. Read it anyway. And there is, I can't think of anything exactly like it, but I do really like Dan Klaus's 4-page Art School Confidential comic that got turned into a movie somehow. It's great and has almost nothing to do with this so far as we know, but it's a lot of fun.
Can I just say that your 3D magic eye way of explaining comics makes so much sense?
Yeah.
That's such a great way of looking at it, because it's kind of like the forest for the trees. Like, you need that slight relaxation to actually like get lost in the world of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I just came up with that on the cuff here. Oh, there you go.
You're brilliant.
You're a savant.
Deb, what did you think?
Oh, well, I love this on so many different levels, right? Because I love her work. I love where manga artists talk about their lives, like, Drifting Life and Zoo in Winter. I like all of these things because it's a glimpse into what it's like to be a manga artist and what you have to go through to get to that place. But also her self-deprecating humor is hilarious. Yeah, the character she creates is really fun. It's really not, it has a really wonderful up and like rhythm to it. Like, funny moments and kind of like melancholy moments and like, what the hell just happened here moments, and then explanations. And so it's kind of like that, this nice kind of, nice rhythm to it that keeps you reading. It does a nice mix of explaining and engaging you in the story, introducing you to characters, which, it seems effortless, but being this good of a storyteller is kind of hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that she's coming at it from a place where she's willing to show off that, I did some stupid stuff. Yeah. I'm not perfect and I'm sure I'm successful now, but I have regrets and I think about things. I like it, on the level, cause I was both an art student and an art teacher. Mm-hmm. I think it's very, and I've had art teachers who were very important to me and really helped change the trajectory of where I was going in my life. Because when you're in your teens and your 20s, you're all potential, right? Mm, and there's so many different paths you can take. And if you don't get the right influence at that time, who knows? It's like sliding doors, right? What could have happened? Mm-hmm. I'll interject with a little weird little story, but in Hawaii, I used to be part of the Artist in a School program. So they would hire me to go to different schools to teach art classes as a supplement. Like, I'm a professional artist and I'm teaching something. So I went to this school in this not so great part of town. And like a lot of the students were like either, Hawaiian, Filipino, Samoan, Tongan, whatever. Just not the most well-equipped and not the most posh art department. So I taught ceramics. There was this one teenage guy. I think he was Filipino Hawaiian. And we were making pinch pots. Like you take a piece of clay, you pinch it, and you make a little pot. And it looked like kids were struggling with it. But this one kid, he was so good at it. He made these beautiful shapes that were just like delicate and thin and just masterful and even. Like, he just had a natural touch for it. And I kept telling him, like, wow, this is so good. You've got a real feel for this, Keep going. See what you can do with it. But the resident art teacher, the full-time art teacher said, that's not good. That's terrible. You got to make it thicker. If you don't make the walls thicker, it's going to blow up in the kiln. And she grabbed it from it and she redid it for him. Mm. And I think about that kid a lot. Not like every day, but I think about it like, wow, this the wrong teacher just kills this talent, kills this mm-hmm. natural, this the joy at this moment. And it's like, who knows, maybe this guy, he's like a, I don't know, maybe he's working at some lame office job, or maybe he's working in some warehouse. I have no idea, because my interaction with him was only a week. Mm. But it makes me sad, you know, mm-hmm. that art programs are being cut, budgets are being cut all over. Yes, it's considered, you know, not necessary. And I feel really strongly about, you know, giving people opportunity to be creative and encouraging them to be creative and empowering them to do it in a way that's meaningful to them. So when I see something like this, when I read a book like this, I think, yeah, you know, I was lucky. I was lucky like Higashimura. I had great art teachers. I had supportive parents who said, yeah, go ahead and do it. Won't pay, but whatever. You're on your own. you know, like they weren't the type of Asian parents like, no, you have to take accounting. Accounting is a good profession.
Yeah.
But mom, I suck at math. You know what I mean? So like they just let me do whatever. So on all, I think like Higashimura, I can look back on my life. And so I lucked out. I, you know, at certain trajectory points in my life, allowed me to be here,
mm-hmm. yeah.
to live a creative life and to always, you know, bring art into my life and share it with other people. And it's really important to me. And I'm glad that no one told me not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that, I mean, your interaction with that student just kind of brings it back to the idea of like encouragement versus critique. And I think the answer is the encouragement has to come at the beginning.
Mm. Yeah.
Like the fact that like, the student had just discovered this joy and was good at it and then got shut down so quickly. Like that's horrible. Like I think you need a few years of the encouragement before the critique comes in,
mm-hmm.
but you can't be all encouragement. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, before I forget though, the books that are equivalent, there's mm-hmm. one called Art Schooled by Jamie Coe from Nobrow. That one's kind of like a longer version of Art School Confidential.
Okay.
It's kind of cynical. Yeah. But I was going to say like another one would be Smile, Raina Telgemeier.
Mm.
I feel like Smile is kind of like an autobiographical comic. But I feel like sometimes young girls like reading it because Raina's telling it from the point of view of like, I'm an adult now.
Yeah,
I make comics.
Yeah.
And you know what? I went through this mortifying embarrassment and pain, but I came out of it the other side and you will too.
Yeah, that's true.
It's funny, the tones are so different. Like the resonance is there, I totally see it, but Higashimura is so snarky sometimes that it didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, because it's aimed at different ages. Like obviously Raina's aimed younger. But coming from the Ala perspective, I think kids really appreciate that.
For sure. Yeah. I want to echo what Deb said about supporting the arts and especially with kids, like in your local vicinity, if there are any nonprofits or like after school programs you can help out with. I've done a few. There's this writing program called 826. It's really fun. There's like New York, San Francisco, and I think maybe LA. But yeah, just help out. Like it really can change a kid's life.
I constantly want to do it because there's a school just like a block away from me. I walk by every day and I say hi to the kids.
Yeah.
I can see in their art class, like as I walk by, and I'm just like, how would this go where I go and I tell them what I do for a living and then they Google me and immediately they pull up sex criminals. Like I'm not teaching those kids. I keep telling my wife this. It's like I desperately want to go in because I'm like, oh, I do Spider-Man and stuff. Some other things. Just ignore that. Parents, teachers.
Haven't you ever gone to like to career days where like, you know, people ask you to go and come talk to my class about your career as a professional, right? And I have my friend John does this all the time. He goes to classrooms and I said, I'm a professional cartoonist. And he says all the time, they always ask him, how much money do you make?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up, little one. You can make a lot of money and have a soul sucking career for your whole life.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So my comparison is actually not a comic. I feel like if you smile when I say the name Daria, you will probably like this comic. Like, I just have a hunch that this is kind of in your wheelhouse.
But doesn't that girl, the girl with the hairpins, look like Daria's friend? And the goth?
Totally. That's exactly why it popped into my head. And then, like, it kept working as I was thinking about it, like, kind of applying the metaphor. But we'll take a break for some advertisements, and then we'll come back for, I don't know, maybe Q&A, maybe a shout out. We'll see what we've got.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, and we are back. I said Q&A, I said shout-outs, but there's something we have to do first before we do anything else, which is picking more books for our manga podcast.
Woo-hoo!
Ooh. I'm glad somebody's excited. Keep coming. Thank you, Chris.
Where's that button of the sound effects?
Yeah, you're really falling down the job there, Chris.
Yeah. So, Deb, do you know what book you'd like to suggest Chip read next?
I do, but it might it might be something that I'm not sure if you're comfortable making this purchase. But we'll
try. Man.
What?
Okay.
Who are you talking to?
Is this going
to
be
here?
A snuff comic? Like,
yeah.
Well,
on the list.
Kinda.
Okay.
Kinda, Jesus.
I've intrigued you, right?
Yeah, you have. You're doing a good job.
Okay. Yeah. So my pick is something brand spanking new.
Okay.
So damn new that it's not even in print. It's Dan. I didn't write down the author's name, but it's a new Shonen Jump series. It's only available on the website. And it's I'm going to recommend you read chapters 1 to 5 because that is the equivalent of volume 1 in the manga when the manga eventually comes out. So anyway, it's a story about a nerdy boy who believes in UFOs and unexplained phenomenon, and a girl who believes in ghosts. And they kind of meet each other in high school, and they say, what are you talking about? That stuff ain't real. And he goes, oh, your stuff ain't real. So they kind of dare each other to go to paranormal hotspots of their respective things. So the girl goes to this place where aliens have been spotted, and the boy goes to a place where ghosts have been spotted. And because this is comics, they both run into both of the respective phenomenon. The boy runs into a horrific ghost, a revengeful ghost, and the girl runs into some aliens who abduct her. It's kind of a wild ride. I don't really want to get too much more into it, but the art's really great. The twists are really interesting. It is only available on the Viz website, and you have to sign in with an account because some of the content requires that you're 18 and older. So that takes care of your nice art, grown-up content.
Whoa.
Way weird.
Sounds like such a kid's book based on the premise, but all right, 18 plus.
The creator of Dan da Dan. Wait a minute, did I even say that right?
You did.
Yeah, Dan da Dan. Yukinobu Tatsu. It was actually the assistant on one of my series that I edit, Hell's Paradise, for like, I don't know, 10 volumes or something like that. Quite a while.
Wow. I didn't know
that. It's really cool to see if there's any kind of overlap in the art style. Chris, do you have a pick?
So I do have a pick. I did have a pick until Deb just accidentally ruined my pick.
Did I do that? I'm sorry.
Is your pick now Dan da Dan 6 through 10?
Yeah.
We're just going to read all 28 chapters of Dan da Dan. No, I was actually going to pick another Shonen Jump exclusive that's digital exclusive, and it's Look Back by the creator of Chainsaw Man. But, you know, we do a lot of...
Oh, that was amazing.
It is good, and it would have been thematically so appropriate, too, to this episode, but that's okay.
No, we can still do that.
Yeah.
No, it's... Man, we pick a lot of Jump and Kodansha, and it's like, there's a lot of publishers out there we should probably try and show some love to. Like, Deb's suggestion is already going to get you buying a Shonen Jump subscription. So, like, we've done the work there. You're set. So, I actually wanted to go back to an old favorite, and there's no digital for it, unfortunately. So, you're going to have to go to a store and buy a copy.
Is it Two Frogs and a Rope?
It is Two Frogs and a Rope.
All right.
No, It is called A Drunken Dream and Other Stories by Moto Hagio. And Moto Hagio is one of the sort of great shoujo mangaka. It's the classic shoujo manga that we've sort of been reading around and hinting at all season, or last season too, I guess, when we were talking about this. It's a collection of short stories that spans her entire career. And it sort of shows her development as an artist. It shows her development as a storyteller and, you know, really gets to some of the core of what she likes to do with her manga. It was published by Fantagraphics in 2010, and it appears to be
at least
partly in print right now. I can't tell 100% for sure.
Actually. No, I saw it at my local bookstore
about
a month ago. Yeah,
it's a little bit. Yeah, Fana let this book go out of print, but then it came back into print, so I wasn't sure. But yeah, it's showing up on many online book sites. You'll be able to get a copy, no problem. I hear The Beguiling has it in stock right now.
So is it only physical?
It is only physical, no digital for you. All right. But it's a really beautiful book that I think you won't mind adding to that shelf. Right. We'll see. Right. We'll see.
She's kind of well-known for her science fiction work, too. So
it's all the things that you like about... It's a lot of the things that you like about manga, where it talks about a creator over the course of their career, and it's really pretty. I think it's a good introduction. If we're ever going to do Rose of Versailles, it's a good introduction to what manga, shoujo manga was like in the 70s, like when we were reading Blank Canvas and things like that, to sort of set the mood, let's say, for future picks. Moto Hagio, Drunken Dream and Other Stories, Fantagraphics, I think it's a good one.
All right.
That's a great pick, but I'm furious because I owned that book 10 years ago and I have to buy it again.
Why did you get rid of it? It's not very good.
Oh, no, it was really good. I ended up giving it to a friend who was like a big Moto Hagio fan who couldn't find it.
Oh. Okay.
And, you know, my bookshelves are always bursting anyway. So I was like, I will bless you with this and you will owe me a favor one day.
Yeah.
So great pick, Chris. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess now the favor is to lend you the book.
Right?
Expedited.
Yeah.
California. David, what's your pick? What are you thinking?
My pick is something I'm going to use to ease the anger from Chris's pick. It is called City by Keiichi Arai. Oh, and man. Yeah, I'm going to read the Amazon description. This surreal slapstick series revolves around a penniless college student, Midori Nagumo, who lives in an ordinary city filled with not quite ordinary people. And as this reckless girl runs about, she sets the city in motion. Midori is in a bit of a bind. She's in debt, and her landlady is trying to shake her down for unpaid rent. Her best friend refuses to loan her cash since he's wise up to her tricks. Maybe some bullying would help, or a bit of petty theft. Neither is sustainable. Maybe getting a job would settle things, but working means less time for fun adventures in the big city. And this description is actually not funny enough for how slapstick the series is.
All right.
Imagine Rocky and Bullwinkle in a city full of Rocky and Bullwinkles. Like, that's the level.
That's a good description.
David knows how to sell the book.
He does.
It's just nested, incredibly slapstick, like, smart, dumb humor, where the punchline is really kind of, like, bottom of the barrel, but the route to get there took you all over the world.
Yeah.
It's a really funny series. I mean, I think it would be kind of fun to talk about because there's kind of no possible context that could prepare you for it. It's just like wacky antics every page, punchline every third page, something like that.
Well, David, you did it again. You sold me on this thing. You're my top pick.
Fantastic.
Good job. Deb, you are number two only because Chris, of course, picked a physical book. And I'm going to put that off for as long as I can. I would also like to throw in a pick as well.
What?
A chip pick?
An unprecedented or precedented once before. I would like to finish BL Metamorphosis. Because I've been thinking about that book often since we read volume one. And knowing that, there's five volumes total?
Volume five comes out in September 22nd.
Okay.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So I think we should finish that bad boy off. We got to see how that young lady becomes young again and lives forever.
I'm stoked.
Assuming is what happens.
I mean, it's called Metamorphosis. Surely that's the direction they're going.
Yeah, see, there you go. I forgot to mention that I thought when the title BL Metamorphosis was first mentioned, I thought it was a horror book. Because it sounds, the title sounds like a horror book, especially if you don't know what boys' love is.
Yeah.
BL Metamorphosis.
I have no
idea. Sounded like Frank and Fran Part 2 or something.
I kind of have no idea how they came to that translation of that title, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. When do you want to do that? Before, after?
Well, I think, was it September 22nd?
Mm-hmm.
I think we should do it like as the final volume comes out so we can actually read it.
Okay. So that would go probably BL Metamorphosis, then City, then Deb's pick, then Chris's pick.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that Beetle Metamorphosis comes out on the 22nd, and our record date is the 22nd.
Oh, okay.
You can actually read 3 and 4 now, and then read 5 on the day of recording. We can all be like, day of. That'd be pretty fun.
All right, let's give it a shot.
Cool. All right, so does anyone have any shout-outs before we wrap up today?
I'm just going to shout out, they announced my new Marvel event today, Devil's Reign. If you love events, if you love Daredevil, you got to hit this. It's just going to be just universe shaking.
Nice.
Wow. Just like all the other Marvel events.
So
just like it.
Is the title a Purple Rain reference or?
No. Here's a manga splitting exclusive. I called it The Fear King. And then the sales department was like, that's stupid. No one's going to buy it. And then when I called it The Secret King, and they said, oh, the word secret doesn't sell anymore. I'm like, well, that's insane. And so after a list of like 20, we ended on Hell's Reign. This was their choice. And then they realized, oh, we can't sell a book with hell in the title in the southern states. So it changed to Devil's Reign.
Nice.
There's a peek behind the curtain of Marvel Comics.
I love it.
So I don't even know what it means anymore.
It means Purple Daredevil shows up on the last page of issue 5.
Exactly. On a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Exactly. With Apollonia.
Chris, did you have anything?
No, I've been, man, just manga. I'm reading, I'm trying to catch up on stuff I've been missing. So,
Deb?
I finished watching all the Evangelion movies. I feel like I deserve a cold star for that.
Nice. Ooh. Congratulations. I still need to see part 4, but I'm looking forward to it.
It was
hopefully
good.
Okay.
I mean, it was, it didn't, you know, have me like throwing soda cups at the screen like I think like past versions of End of Evangelion. I got it. I mean, I liked it. Mm. I still Googled every article about what was that ending all about.
Yeah, of course.
Just to kind
of
one see of those endings.
Yeah. Love it.
But it was good.
Nice.
Cool. My shout out is to a friend of mine, Alyssa Sala. Her new book, Weeaboo, is debuting. Wow.
Debut.
Alyssa Sala, my friend, has a book debuting named Weeaboo that's coming from Oni Press very soon. You should pre-order it. You can find her work at bonfirecomics.com, but she's kind of like, she grew up on manga, she loves comics, and she's kind of like one of the types of people that I feel like our podcast is really good for, kind of okay. Like sitting across the North American and Japanese divide.
Nice.
Check out Alyssa's graphic novel. It looks really cool. It's about anime and otaku culture in a high school. And that's all I got. So on behalf of Chip, Chris, and Deb, I am David, and thank you for listening to Manga Splaining. This has been Manga Splaining, episode number 31. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing the manga Blood on the Tracks by Shuzo Oshimi. Want to pick up a copy? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. Find one near you at comicshoplocator.com or check out your local library for print and digital lending options. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices?
And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.